this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
Lord, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ritchie on the board. S&P futures down 33. We don't go down. NASDAQ futures down 267. We even have Micron down. What's going on here? We have the professor. Carl, he's joined the room. Suspect he will. You gotta take me out of my funk here this morning, Carl. Very, very troubling conversation yesterday with young Katie about the hospitals and all that stuff. Very troubling.
Oh, what? Well, I didn't hear it. So could you give me the 30-second refresh?
Well, she's been doing a lot of stuff. I mean, when I say doing a lot of stuff, she was doing a lot of research. So she went through all that, and how the money all works for that. Kind of troubling there with all the overhead and stuff people put on all the research.
Oh, well, it's I bet she's nowhere close to have dug into it in the sort of form and fashion that I have over the years. But
let's put it this way: for a young lady, she's like a little Carl, for God's sake.
And then I'm just saying, it sounds like she's good, from what you've already said. It sounds like she's on the right track. She just. Boy, you only think she understands it. If she actually did, she'd probably, I don't know.
Well, she went on to talk about working at a group, an ENT group, that gave people tests they knew they didn't need.
Right.
And then went on to talk about big hospitals, which she's been working in recently.
Right.
Where the guy in finance tells the doctor how long they can spend on a patient.
Oh,
you want to tell me that that's a nonprofit organization?
It gets better. So where it all here's the thing: where it all starts.
I'm just saying, for a lady, somebody who's 23 years old, to pick it up, how the rest of us don't figure it out. I'm sitting there looking at India's bitching and moaning about the inflation and the Strait of Hormuz. Their money supply is growing 17% a year. What are they talking about?
Okay, it gets worse.
Let's just say, I just dabbled in a few things this morning. Already I'm grumpy.
Well, you want to get really grumpy, okay. Democratization of information means that, of course, which we have with the internet, I'm one of the people that helped make that happen, means that it has never been cheaper to learn how to do anything in the history of mankind. Ever, never. All right. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if it's cutting hair, or being a dentist, or a doctor, or whatever.
I'm sure I'd want one of those guys drilling my toothless, but that's another thing.
Well, I'm not. I didn't say do it well.
Yeah.
Okay. I said it's never been cheaper.
I did learn how to adjust my headlights on my truck from YouTube.
I'm just saying, it's never been cheaper to learn how to do something, right? I mean, never in the history of mankind, and yet. Today, it costs $400,000 to become a dentist. Now, nobody has $400,000 if you're 19 years old.
I was just at my dentist last week, and some guy, his buddy just hired some kid out of dental school.
Right.
Did we go over this on Friday? Was it 140 grand a year for 4 years? Something like that. Well, that's where you're at. And the weird part of it is he has the kid is now learning a lot of stuff. And I go, what does that mean? He says, well... Because when I was in dental school, we had to do 5 root canals before you graduated, and you did, God knows how many cavities. This kid's done 1 root canal.
Right. Well, here's the problem with this. All right, so now you come out of there. Of course, nobody goes into college at 19 unless you're the child of a billionaire with $400,000, right? I mean, that doesn't happen.
College being med school.
Right, so, well, or any kind of med
school. Well, they have the blended, like at Northwestern, you can...
Okay. Point being, Chief, is you come out of there with this huge pile of debt.
Right.
Okay, which is non-dischargeable, which, by the way, is all criminal fraud. All right, the structures that put this in place, every bit of it, done by the government on purpose to, because, you know, God forbid, we can't throw anybody in jail for doing this kind of thing. The American Medical Association has a monopoly on the CPT codes that every single hospital and medical center uses in order to code up whatever it is that they do with you. All right. Now, I thought... 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 says that doing that kind of thing gets you 10 years in the slam where you get to be best friends with a rapist. Apparently, that doesn't apply to anybody who's favored enough to bribe off the right people. So we have all of these structures that are built around this. And it would take... God, we could spend 4 hours just listing them in the medical system, okay? The Hydra has so many heads... that if you chop off one, it'll grow back and eat you before you can kill all the rest. So the only way to destroy this thing is to nuke the entire thing from orbit. But the problem for you as a consumer is that that kid comes out of dental school with $400,000 worth of debt.
That's assuming he has no undergrad debt.
Well, I understand. Yeah. All right, but he comes out of dental school with that. He can't set up a practice independently with that kind of a balance.
Yeah, no way. Yeah, no way.
No chance in hell. So he goes to work for someone like Aspen, okay, which is a private equity-owned large dental conglomerate that's all over the country. And there he is essentially told to find $20,000 worth of stuff you need done in your mouth or get fired.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter whether you actually need $20,000 worth of stuff done in your mouth. What matters is he has to make enough money to pay those loans. And if he doesn't, he's screwed. So
it's sort of like a restaurant. We don't care what you eat, but it's $100 for your ass in the seat.
Yeah. And so...
doesn't this all kind of come together?
Well, you know, here's one of the interesting things. You know, Cuban's been railing about this for a while now, right? In the pharmaceutical business. All right, of course, he's trying to find some way to, you know, to get his piece of it, which, I mean, that's capitalism, right? That's what you're supposed to be doing, is trying to find a way to get your piece of something. You look at something as a fat margin and attack it. Duh. By the way...
Well, you want to attack it the old-fashioned way, not by getting a law passed that favors you. I'm not saying he's doing that, but other people do.
No, I'm saying, competition... Dude, listen, it's like I pointed out the other day. McDonald's has a 45% operating margin. There is no way for that to exist when your business is the commodity business of selling hamburgers unless... you have colluded with the other people that sell hamburgers, because if you didn't do that, somebody would come in there and sell that 250 McDouble effectively, the same size hamburger on a bun with pickles and ketchup and mustard, for a dollar instead of 250 and put your ass out of business. Right? So you'd either have to cut that crap out or die. And the reality is they have a 45%.
You know, I would
now here. Look, we allow a limited time patent protection for new inventions because the premise, and it gets abused like crazy, and we need to fix the abuses. But the premise behind it is that this is good for society, because after your 17 years run out,
it's only a premise. I had a professor in college who said it was the worst laws anybody ever passed.
Well, I'm not. We can get into, okay, how do you fix the problems with the idea, right? But the reality is that if you want me to stick my nose on the wheel and grind it off, grind off a couple inches of it, then by God, there has to be a profit motive at the end of that in order for me to be interested in doing it. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, with that concept, all right, with the concept of a profit motive behind these things. People like Bernie Sanders and AOC think there is, but they're wrong. The reality, however, is that we have abused this and allowed it to be abused. The whole reason you have 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 is because back in the late 1800s, you had this crap going, the same kind of crap going on in the oil business with Standard Oil and everybody else. And lawmakers realized that if you did not do something about this problem, that eventually this was going to strangle off any hope of economic progress for essentially everybody. And if it kept going beyond that, Tom, what you were going to get was a violent revolution.
I'm with you. I'm going to say one thing about the... I would like to give... maybe their heart's in the right place, but I would like to give AOC and Bernie Sanders a calculator for Christmas. But here's my concern. There are people, and I don't include you in this mess, that because they have benefited by whatever this economy is right now,
right,
and by the largesse of government or by something. Or by being in the right stocks, it got the largesse of government. I think in a lot of ways, the Bernie Sanderses and the AOCs are the people who were railing against the system in the 30s. Because I think a lot of people now are almost in the same position, not to the extreme extent, but in terms of going downhill every year as they were in the 30s. And to not recognize... I mean, I also have... I'll say, economic buffoon friends that say, "Well, oh man, we're capitalistic and we're not socialistic." Well, first of all, we're some kind of crony capitalistic for probably 50% of our crap, which I'm not so sure that's better than socialism. To be honest with you, as a guy who traded the trading pit for 20 years, I abhor even the word of social. I don't think that is good for people. Some societies seem to do well with it. I don't think ours would, and in general, I don't think it's a good idea. But I'm not so sure. Just what you said here right now, I would guess that if you and I could withdraw from the world and clone for 20 days and come back 10 minutes from now after 20 days of work, you and I could do some, you know, we better bring Hal with us because he's Mr. Math. We could do some real serious work on just what our definitions are now. I mean, you just talked about McDonald's having a 45% margin. In any normal world that we understand, if Joe is selling his hot dogs for $4 and it's costing him 80 cents to make them, you and I are going to go, wait a minute, we could probably do just as good on the hot dogs at $3 and still make out real well. But I think the whole term margin, the whole term profit now, they're all, when we started out the show talking about the profit in the medical area, well, they're non-profit. Bullshit. I mean, I think right now that the McDonald's advantage is in having the property at a certain rate, having the place that if you and I wanted to build a something like McDonald's across the street, our replacement cost at today's to duplicate that McDonald's, not to mention getting the property, getting the zoning, getting all the crap that somebody had to do. I mean, it has nothing to do at this point with the price of the hamburger, which I never thought I'd say. I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. It has nothing to do with the price of the hamburger. Now, if it was $30, maybe you and I could find a way to get there, but there's no way on earth that somebody could get the property, get the zoning, whatever you got to do to the alderman or whatever it is, put the place up at today's prices and compete for that hamburger. You can't do it. Well, even though it looks like it's expensive as hell, and it probably is.
Well, okay, but again... where we are with all this is that the reality of it...
By the way, I don't like what I just said, so please
I didn't say you did. I said the reality is that McDonald's... Look, any time I look at any firm selling a commodity, all right, and by the way, if you want to see really obscene examples of this and why I'm absolutely convinced that this market is going to fall back and blow up in everybody's face, all you have to do is look at the socks.
Okay. Yeah.
These and then the companies that make it up, and
what about the SMH? For God's sake!
Well, it's basically the same thing. Okay.
Do you remember? Sorry, the it's got to be a decade ago. I haven't seen him back on. The head of White Castles, of all things, was on CNBC.
Yeah.
And it was back, I think Maria Bartiromo was still on CNBC. And asked him something like, what do you think the biggest danger is in the restaurant business going forward? He says the spread between cooking something at home and buying it in a restaurant has never been bigger, and it's only getting bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, Audrey and I went out for breakfast 2 weeks ago, and we paid, you know, $16 an omelet. I bought 15 dozen extra large eggs for $10.60 at the depot 2 days later. I mean, duh.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, well, breakfast is the highest margin day part in a restaurant.
Well, you can buy a pork loin for $1.79 at the depot for the best pork loin on earth, and you go out and pork chops are $30 for two pork chops.
Right, right. But you know, look, the problem right now that you have is that you have this throughout the economy, different places, right? And then you have today, right now, we have this little war going on over the Iran and the Strait of Hormuz and everything else, right?
That everybody's blaming all their problems on, by the way.
Well, okay. However, let's back this up just a moment. The Europeans and the Asians, to a substantial degree, have all bought into the green scam. We're all going to die, by the way, in 4 years. 2030 is the year that was put forward, remember?
Yeah.
Okay? We're all going to be dead, every one of us, because the earth is going to be so hot, you won't be able to, you know, your shoes will melt on the pavement and things like this. Okay. This is claimed to all be our fault, and all these governments, from Canada to basically all of Europe, huge parts of Asia, the, you know, New Zealand, Australia, all these other places have all said, "Oh, we've decarboned everything."
Yeah, well,
this is what they said. Now they lied, all right. And this is the same thing. Look at California. California has a huge amount of oil offshore, right offshore. Okay, they shut down extracting it and refining it because there was a spill at one point. Rather than go after the people who did the stupid thing, make them fix it, and then turn it back on and exploit their carbon-based energy, they said, "Oh no, no, no! You have to drive EVs." The truth is that they have been importing diesel, gasoline, and crude from Asia and from the Gulf. All right? That's the truth. And on top of that, they've been driving refineries out of the state for the last 20 years. A huge population there. So the last tanker full of crude from the Persian Gulf just unloaded at Long Beach. Just got done.
Wait a minute. Trump says we don't need their oil. We're selling ours.
Oh, well, yeah, if you're willing to go get it, all right. In California, you're not. So, oh, by the way, gets worse because California has their own fuel standards, so you can't just take a tanker full of gasoline from Texas and bring it over there and dump it into the tank at the gas station.
The oil in New York and New Jersey comes from the Gulf. I mean, we spread it around here.
I get all this, okay? But all of a sudden, oh, well, you know, now there's a problem because you're going to end up at, you know, with literal shortages. Okay, California deserves this, and F them because they have made
this. Well, we have a president who says we don't have a problem, and yet he says let's go sell it. Well, now we got a problem.
Well, that's even, I said when the war started, the smart thing to do was to make all those Europeans who played the "we don't use any carbon, we're green, we're da-da-da," make them eat their own crap by shutting off all exports. Because, and under the DPA, he can do that in a war, which we're in. So shut off the exports.
No, we're not. It's over.
Yeah, okay. So shut off the exports and let these people twist on their own petard. And make them eat their own cooking for a change. Oh, well, their economy is tough crap.
Why should we penalize them? We started the damn thing.
We're not penalizing them. They have set the standards that we don't need any.
Okay, well,
we're
happy to sell them our stuff and screw our people here as well.
Well, that's even worse.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not defending what they're doing, okay? I'm simply saying that we have allowed, as a society, we have allowed these lies to permeate
everything. We allow absolutely everything. We talk about this every week.
It's all BS.
But the idea is...
But by the way, the consequences are not BS, and you can't evade them.
No, you can't. And it always lands on the same people. Well, so I mean, the idea of the Bernie Sanders and the AOC, I mean, I don't really like listening to them. You know who AOC reminds me of? People who think I'm more nuts than they already think I am already. By the way, I'm on her mailing list. I'm like her new boyfriend. I get like two things a day from her.
Yeah, well, that's a big shock.
She reminds me so much of Trump, it's scary. In the sense that every article, every letter, is how she won the first time, and everybody said she couldn't. It's like she's listening to the idiot.
Chief, her best and highest calling is in the pornography industry. So, you know what?
Yeah, but
I am so tired of people like her and
well,
Bernie
but
Sanders.
Sometime, you have to have some people who recognize what the regular people are going through. Now, do you think?
And her answer to that is to steal it from everyone else.
Well, you know, to a certain extent, they've stolen it from you.
Who stole it?
I'm saying the idea that you want to tax up the income tax for the guy who runs the hospital and is making 90 bazillion a year, 10 times more than the doctors, by telling, I don't mind taxing that guy. They don't. Do you? What's he done for us?
Okay, so basically the bottom line here is, rather than enforce the law, which would make his salary drop like a rock.
Right. Well, we're not going
to
do that.
Costs would drop like a rock. Instead of that, stick it to him and redistribute it around. And, oh, by the way, let the government choose how to do it. That is what you just said.
What I said is it is a solution. And there is
no, it's not.
Well, it is. The one you're talking about ain't happening.
Chief, no, it's not. If she gets her $30 an hour minimum wage, the actual minimum wage for anybody in any economy is zero.
I am not. You know I'm not for a $30 minimum wage.
That's what her newest proposal is.
Howard, what I try to do is I'm listening to all kinds of people on the show that I have. What I'm trying to do is learn from everybody. I don't like her solutions.
Yeah, she's a lunatic.
Okay. But she's seeing stuff that other people refuse to see. That part, I don't have a problem with. Not a solution. I mean, when Bernie Sanders said we're gonna get rid of, I understand where he's coming from. Where these student loans are screwing people. I mean, you said that. Everybody has. Now his idea that we should put a transaction tax on stock and get rid of all the student loans. I'm going, Bernie, first of all, that doesn't add up. I don't have a problem with him recognizing that the student loans are a problem.
Okay, so here's,
I don't have to go with a solution, but I mean, there's people that you do it. You bring up problems to me,
Chief.
I never even heard of. That's why do you think I want you here?
I understand that, Chief. I'm not saying that we should, you know, that the answer to this is to put a tax on this. And yes, Bernie is saying, you know, the student loans are a problem. Okay, the reason student loans are a problem is because the colleges are all Taj Mahals.
I get that.
And oh, by the way, despite the democratization of information, which means that, look, when I was of college age, to have a personal computer, something that you could actually program on, learn to program in your own dorm room, was a couple $1,000 premise.
You know what?
I had one. I was one of the few people.
You know what a calculator was when I was in high school?
Yeah.
$300, more than a TV.
Yeah, and by the way, it only did plus, minus, times, and divide, too.
Right, absolutely.
My dad had one of the original Monroes, so he was a CPA, that's why he had it. But I had one of the original personal computers, one of the TRS-80s, on my desk in college. Essentially, nobody else did because they were expensive as hell, and I saved for quite a while to be able to afford that and buy it, all right?
Don't tell me you had a calculator holster.
No. Today, you have more computing power than that in your pocket by a factor of about 1,000.
What do you think? What do you think happened to all the guys who had the calculator holsters? You think they What do you think happened to them?
I don't know.
What do you think they were like as adults?
Well, you know, pocket protectors were a thing for quite a while too, right? And if you wanted to be marked as an absolute nerd and
absolutely,
that was the easiest way to do it.
Well, you're talking about is now we have take a look at your buddy Elon Musk. The company can't pay a dividend. They just can't.
Right.
What did the dude make $500 million a day last year from the company? Now he's going to China with Trump.
Yeah, he's not the only one going to China with Trump.
He and the head of BlackRock, which you and I have serious problems with BlackRock. Who's the other guy? Is it Bebo? Who's the third?
There's a bunch. Yeah. And by the way, part of this is they want to. Now I'd love to know how Trump, where he gets the authority to do this. Supposedly
he does whatever he wants.
Okay. He believes what I've heard. Now I don't know. This could be scuttlebutt and complete crap because you don't know what on the media is and isn't these days. That the purpose of doing this is to essentially provide what amount to licenses to Chinese companies to set up manufacturing in the United States. First off, that's not going to happen.
I think it's all because he's so overmatched intellectually. He had to bring these guys with.
Well, perhaps, but the reality is that's garbage because the only reason that construction and activity and manufacturing is in China is because the Chinese can pollute the air, land, and water and enslave the employees, and therefore...
You and I are not fans of the Chinese.
The manufacturing is there because of abuse of both the environment and the human capital required to do it, okay? That's why it's there. That's the only reason it's there. And... that is, if that comes here to this country, and Mr. Taco actually
what makes you think that the same mentality in China, where a few people run the whole damn place and make all the money, isn't the same mentality of the bozos we're bringing with?
Well,
Elon Musk thinks that you and I are his equal?
Oh, good God, no! And by the way, I've gone after him for a long time because on the math, none of this crap with EVs and solar works, and it's just simply a physics problem, and he's conned his way into getting the government to force you to pay the bill for him to be able to do it.
One of these days, we probably got Joel coming in pretty soon. But one of these days, I'm going to make good on my thread count, and I want you on the show when I read it. The thing about Harold Janine, talking about how people in business are so much smarter than politics, they really should just run the world. Nothing has changed. These people think they should run the world, and they are. And somehow or other, the rest of us are elected officials. They have been compromised by, I'll use the term, the dark side. And I'm so pro-business, it's scary, but this is not business. This is plutocracy. This is something.
Well, this is not business. This is slavery, it ought to be met with the end of a rope.
I always thought that we could sort of turn the bus around. And then I always listened to you. But then the weird part is, Russell said, even Karlsruhe, we got to get the guillotines.
I've said that many times. Look, I've pointed out that at some point, if you have no rule of law, okay, we are there,
where do you start?
Here's the problem. If you're going to let somebody get arrested 60 times for felonies and not go to jail, okay, then explain to me why anything other than the law of the jungle, which is, if I can get away with it, I'm going to do it.
Well,
all right. And by the way, if the time comes that some doctor says to me, hey, jackass, you have incurable cancer, you're dead in 6 months, I'm not going to go cashier everybody I believe deserves it. Because then the punishment is nil. You can't punish me for that offense.
Well, I would. I don't know
you
where I
live in that world, Chief,
I'm not sure where I would start. I'd probably start somewhat on the tax side and hope that maybe it would help a little bit. For instance, on the corporate tax side, I would raise the corporate rate up to a personal rate, so everybody pays the same amount. Duh, imagine that. But I would make dividends deductible. You only have to pay once.
Right. Well, that's that would be an intelligent thing to do.
Which we're never going to do. Now, you can't tell me that Northwestern Hospital, with the term, by everything they're doing, they act like more of a... They care less about their clients, for God's sake, way less than we do at PTI. Yet you were considered a profit organization. They're not. You know,
Chief, look at what happened with you know, Musk gets involved in this alleged nonprofit AI thing, right? And then it gets essentially stolen and converted into a private firm.
Well, Chicago's broke. Tell me why Northwestern doesn't play property taxes. They make more money than anybody else in the city.
Tell me why Northwestern, which is allegedly a nonprofit hospital, right?
Yeah, okay. In somebody's eye.
Right, allegedly a nonprofit hospital. Why isn't everybody paying the same price? Why is it that a nonprofit, or a for-profit for that matter, if they had to post every price and everybody had to pay the same price and the screwing that goes on between the insurance companies and everything else was stopped, the cost of medical care would drop like a stone. You would be able to pay cash for anything. When I was a child, we had a cat that got hit by a car but wasn't killed. All right. Now that almost never happens, but it did. She had an entire side of her body and all the skeletal structure was essentially destroyed. They put that cat back together. Bandit was, when she came back to the house after the surgery, she was shaved. By the way, if you've never seen a shaved cat, it's one of the weirdest things in the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. They put that cat back together. We were a middle-class family. We paid cash for that.
Yep. Now it'd be 10, 15 grand.
Now, there's no way you could do that, and by the way, all of that cartel crap has invaded every single veterinary office.
As soon as Joel goes on, I got a quick cat story.
He's not up yet.
I got a quick cat story for you. Well, actually, this is crazy. When I was on the trading floor, I won't say I was popular, but everybody liked me. I wasn't a bad guy. Didn't screw people.
Hey, I'm here.
Okay.
Oh, there he is.
Well, quick story here, Joel. So the young ladies know everything, right? And they knew that I owned a tux. I didn't have to rent one. So whenever they had one of their girlfriends come to town for like a formal event, it happened a few times, they would ask me if I would be a date for their friend. Because I had a tux, and if I would have had to go out and rent one, I go, nah, I'm not renting a tux, but I had one. They knew that. Anyway, I had a date with this young lady from Ohio. She's an ophthalmic surgeon for animals, even big animals. Like, they'd nuke a lion in the zoo, and she's operating on the lion, hoping that the person who gave him the anesthesiologist knew what they were doing.
Give him the right amount.
Yeah. Well, she told me that the difference between cats and any other animal is so dramatic. She says, if you operate on a cat's eye versus a dog eye, the cat will heal in like one-fifth the time. Whatever... cats have. The nine lives thing is not a joke. So the fact that your cat recovered from this, I bet a dog wouldn't have, from what this lady told me.
Well, quite possibly, yeah. I mean, it was astounding. And, I mean, today, that cat would have been euthanized.
Oh, yeah. Hey, well, let's pick this up again on Friday, if not before. I'm not sure if Kenny's piling in. He might be on TV. So if you're going to hang around, I might hear you. But thanks, bud. Hey, Joel, I apologize for my answer yesterday on your show when you asked me regarding how a trader looks at things differently than a...
Yes.
So if you ask me back on, I would like the same question because I would answer it in a totally different way.
Well, go ahead.
I mean, Joel asked me the difference in knowledge between like a person who's been on the trading floor like me trading options and the average retail trader and essentially what I provide for people. And I, you know, again, the answer I think was okay, and we know different things to do, and how we don't necessarily will sell the same thing we bought because we sell the most advantage. But I think the difference, Joel, where I should have started was, if we have a client at PTI or you're advising somebody, if they decide they're going to do their homework and they like IBM or they like McDonald's or whatever, and they buy it, the thought in their mind. And sometimes in lectures I've actually said this, well, who do you buy it from? And they'll say, well, what do you mean? I bought it from Schwab. No, you didn't buy it from Schwab. You bought it from somebody. Who's the somebody? What are you talking about? I said, you bought it from another person. Oh. I said, now what makes you think that the other person who sold it to you wasn't smarter than you today? That maybe he was a smart one today and not you. Well, what do you mean? I did all my research. You know, the thought of in your mind, you're the person who initiates the trade. Where if you're a trader, what's your market on the puts? 2 to 1/8, sell you 10. Okay. What's your market on the puts? 15 a teeny, sell you 10. Well, you might even be bullish on the stock and now you're long put. A trader never assumes, since he doesn't initiate the trade, that he is the smart one. You always assume the other person knows more than you, especially if you're like trading oil contracts in the middle of the night now, right, or something like that. You always assume, so your whole mentality is playing defense. Okay, I bought 10 of these at 2. Who's 3 bid for the next strike? Who's 3 bid for the next month out? Where can I sell the stock? Oh, that kind of thing where a retail person, that never even enters their mind. So the difference is whether you think if the trade is done to you or you do the trade yourself. And it brings up a whole skill set of playing defense that a retail person never even would think about. I know that's a little too complicated, but that's a better answer.
You know, Chief, you're a pro's pro because you do an interview like that and you think about it afterwards. And that just is a sign of all the years that you've been doing things and, you know, your experience in the markets and wanting delivering good content to people. And I really appreciate that.
I mean, Joel, it's simple. Joel's my friend. He invites me out. I want to do the best job I can. It's very simple to me.
But I find, too, like I interview a lot of people and I come in here and talk. And, you know, a lot of time, you know, I like to have something in my mind. I like to have a point. I'd like to either get an education or something across. And sometimes, well, I don't always do that. But and then afterwards, sometimes I think, you know, oh, I could have improved. So I thank you for that. And I want you to take it as a strict compliment.
Well, thank you.
I don't know what to say about these markets, Chief.
What do you think about this market today? We're actually down a little bit. Is this another buy the dip, or what is this?
For me, no. I don't know what is going to make this market. I don't even know where for value is in this market. I don't. And I think we discussed this yesterday. I mean, the circumstances here. I mean, how long can they ignore oil? I mean, it's going to have an impact. Okay, fine. Earnings are fine. Things are fine. AI is fine. Everything's fine. Well, everything's fine until it's not. And I see, you know, no resolutions, you know, straight hormones. I see, you know, I think one thing that's kind of keeping a little bit under the market, you know, if Xi and Trump, you know, kind of kiss and make up and stuff and have a real good meeting and we're doing this, that, and the other thing. But the underlying bid in this market is unbelievable. Today is a day where you're seeing a little bit of a risk off. How long will that last? How long? People are so, and actually now I'm looking at the S&Ps and the red by 27, you know, handles. Tech, you know, they're selling tech. Oil up, boom. Staples up. Retail, you can't tell me that if you're spending $100 to fill up your tank, that you're not going to spend less at a store. I mean, it's going to have an effect. Travel and leisure, I mean, these airlines, I mean, they've already come out and said that, you know, the higher prices. But you know what, Chief? I could say all these things, but it absolutely has no impact on the market. It continues to go up. It continues to ignore all these factors. So I'm not gonna try and call top. It's too expensive of a sport.
Well, that part's for sure. What would you say is the, I use the term, the real market? If you look at, I mean, we have a lot of stocks we're managing for people that have been straight down.
Yeah.
I mean, Meta's not going anywhere. Microsoft's going the wrong way. Some of these, I mean, and yet 5 or 6 of them are going the right way. And you wonder which is the one you have to watch. I mean, the world can't all be Micron or the SMH index. I mean, the I don't know. I think you're probably right on the... I don't know if I didn't send it to you, but one of the listeners sent me a YouTube video for some guy who's explaining the Strait of Hormuz, but he went through all the other products that aren't going through there. You know, and he's talking about a backlog at the Panama Canal, because how many more ships are going through there, and how the people that have potash, for instance, or, mm-hmm. or something like that, they're at the end of the line because the oil tankers are paying more, the ones that can get through to the Suez Max. I mean, the Suez and what they got a Panama Max, too, right? But all these other stuff, how it's affecting farmers, that's maybe not till next year or the end of this year. So nobody's have their eye on that. So it's not just the tank. And everybody's convinced it's just the tank. No, it's not. Plus, it's more important, the diesel number, than what you and I pay for gas. I mean, you and I paying $20 more for gas every week is an inconvenience, and it's something we're not spending somewhere else. I get that part. But it's not the same as diesel being $6 a gallon, and everything I touch is being disturbed by that. Not to mention, that's what farmers use to dry some of the corn and stuff.
Chief, you may be spending more at the gas pump, but I'm not. My electric bill's a little bit higher.
There you go.
Yeah, but I just, for folks, you know, we, of course, you know, coming on every week and different things and saying different things about the market. Obviously not giving, you know, investment advice. You've been in the markets as long as I have, and, you know, you've reached, you know, a lot of your investment objectives and stuff. I mean, it maybe gets better than this, but I don't know. You likely see some more downside action, violent downside action. That's the markets.
I mean, quick question before you, Dash. What do you make of, like, these other countries like India? They came out today and their inflation is up for how many months in a row? They're up to, like, they think they're up at 3.8%. But that's okay. It was expected to be 3.9, you know, whatever. I'm looking at their money supply. So the money supply is on a pace of 17%. Who are they kidding with this 3% inflation? Who's massaging those numbers? They're out of control. Why do you think that the South Korea market is up every day? They're going at a 7% money supply growth rate. They've never done that. I mean, we're doing the same thing here. Why do we keep blaming this inflation on oil when we're doing it to ourselves? All these countries are.
You got to get a resolution. And it's going to take effect. I just don't know when. Chief, I got a hop.
All right, bud.
Go blue. We did talk sports again, but we will next week for sure.
Well, your guys are in a 2-2.
They looked bad last night. I don't know. They better win in the Motor City. They got some problems. Cleveland got hot. I'm worried. To say I'm not worried would be a lie. But
the Knicks are pretty tough, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think they'll get by the Knicks anyways. All right, Chief.
All right, bud. Take care.
Everyone, good luck out there.
Do we have Kenny?
No Kenny yet, Chief. We have Carl.
We still have, Carl, what do you make of that?
He's right, and it's much worse than a lot of people realize. So everybody who wants to talk about this whole oil thing, of course, what you see is the price of gasoline, right?
Yep.
But as I pointed out, you've got certain areas like California that, along with an awful lot of other nations, that have lied about the alleged decarbonization of the economy in their regions or in their nations. And now they're getting it stuck up their back door as a result of the facts coming out and slapping them in the face. But it is not just, you know, carbon is the basis of all modern civilization. All the way back to when the
first... Not to mention it's the basis of how we live.
well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, all the way back to the first caveman that figured out how to light a log on fire, okay? So, I mean, you know, it's that far and that involved in everything. One of the huge issues is sulfuric acid, which is used in all sorts. I mean, we all know that it's battery acid, right? It's in the, you know, in the starting battery of your car. It's used in all manner of chemical synthesis, things that are absolutely essential to modern life. And one of the huge producers of that is over there in the Gulf. All right. All of that's cut off. You have urea, which is not just fertilizer, it's also DEF, which is that exhaust fluid that goes in modern diesel trucks. That's cut off.
Well, you've got helium cut off, and you need that for...
You've got helium. People don't understand this. Two things about with helium, well, actually several things with helium, but two of the big ones are that every MRI machine needs it to cool the magnets. Without helium supply, you can't get an MRI, period. End of conversation. And secondly, all modern scale semiconductor manufacturing, not talking about the old style TTL chips, the large chips for their density that go into some things. You know, there's some of that stuff in everything today, all right? I'm talking about the large scale, small nanometer CPUs, memory chips, things like this. All of those need helium in the manufacturing. Without it, there isn't any. Now, these are real impacts. And the fact that we in the United States, along with all these other nations, in the name of, by God, we can be more efficient, we put this crap in China. No, what you're really doing is you're just moving the pollution over there in the slave labor instead of producing it in the U.S. You claim to be getting a better deal, but the consumer doesn't get that. The executives do. The stockholders do. And then all of a sudden, you do this, but you did not include a sinking fund for what you need. And that's, you know, it's the same thing as having a roof on a building, but there's no sinking fund for replacing it. And then something goes wrong with that supply chain.
Well, you know what how much you just said tied in with what we were said earlier, because we used to do this in class, like all day. You were learning about computers. This is what I was doing in class. If somebody were to do something like that, I won't say slave labor, but if somebody were to, on the floor of a factory in a perfectly competitive society, if somebody invented a machine which impacted the worker to where instead of doing 10 widgets for an hour, he now did 14,
right,
or 15. I mean, I used to be able to go through, maybe I still could if I slapped my head up 15 times, what percentage, how all those graphs would shift, and almost just depending on the margins, depending on this, you could tell, okay, how much the worker should benefit, because some of it should be his, because now he's providing more.
Right.
And how much the price should go down.
Right.
How much the company should make a little more. Yeah. You know, by the way, how much maybe because of the increases, how much the executive should make versus the dividend people versus the shareholders. All that stuff now is compromised.
Right.
In my mind.
We just don't have any. There's no reality in any of this anymore.
You know what the people don't talk about, because stocks go up and it's
right.
But none of it goes. I mean, I would say one of the parts we never talk about this. Maybe we'll open it up on Friday. I think the way the companies are run and the corporate board structure. I should get Eric back on. He's the one who brought up this whole idea of this management class, which has taken over essentially the profits of the country, because nobody rides herd on the management class. They'll screw the consumer, they'll screw the worker, but the management class is convinced that they are. And by the way, the owners, the shareholders, are really the people that are getting screwed. In my mind, it's about every country, a company. Now you may say the stock is up, but how much more would Tesla be up if they didn't give $500 million a day?
But if they didn't steal all the money from you, they wouldn't exist. So,
well, no, what I'm saying is, who manages that return?
By the way, Kenny's up, so
okay.
I'm going to let him have his time.
All right. Hey, Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, we're doing all right. We've had a couple of interesting guests this week, and we've been kind of going through it. One of the ladies yesterday, she's been a research. She's only, I don't think she's 24 maybe, but she's a really bright girl and very aware of what's going on around her. She's done a lot of research, is able to report on where all the research money comes from, all the different cost centers, how much overhead these, like the new university drops on top of the project, and it's pretty scary. And then she worked for some doctors groups and how they give tests that they don't need. We're still kind of reeling from this conversation yesterday, but it's almost like, is the whole world a crook?
Right.
You kind of wonder, but I was just going through India, is all telling everybody how they're holding the inflation at 3.8%. Kenny, the money supply has grown by 17%. How the hell are they holding their inflation at 3.8%? Or what kind of lie are they telling?
I know, right?
Yeah, I just saw
that headline. I didn't get a chance to read the story yet, but I just saw that headline. Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I don't honestly, between you and me, you know, I don't pay a lot of mind to what's happening in India, because I think there are other places to invest the money. So yes, I saw the headline, but I'm not necessarily gonna I'm not changing my thesis because of it.
Yeah, I'm not either. I just, my brother, who is he's a president of PTI, does a great job, but he used to be a trader on the trading floor. He traded them in the corn option pit. So yeah. Me being, you know, himself, CPA, learned everything there was to know about corn and soybeans and you name it, because that's, you know, that's what, yes, he did. But he watches this thing that the United Nations puts out. It has to do with the World Price Index. And if it's not as horrible now as you think it would be, but back when it got to over the average, it's a while ago, but the average person worldwide makes like $5 a day.
Yep.
So if the price of the cereal column, meaning, you know, whatever kind of cereal, rice, whatever they're eating, if that goes over $5, it's a problem, because people can't necessarily feed themselves. And the last time it busted over $5 for quite a while was essentially the Arab Spring. It brought revolutions in God knows how many countries. So you have to wonder if this creeps to the point where it goes back to the same stuff. It's not just people are paying more for lunch. I mean, it creates huge economic dislocations in a lot of countries that are pretty poor. And I have to believe that India is one of them.
Well, I would imagine it is. And you know, this whole issue around the Iran conflict and the Strait of Hormuz and what goes through there besides oil, so fertilizer and stuff like that, is going to start, I would imagine, is going to really start to impact not only the world, but countries like that.
Well, Carl was just saying, you absolutely need helium for chip manufacture. You need it to run it. If you don't have it, you can't run your MRI machine if you don't have it.
Right, but you need fertilizer to grow food, right,
yep,
all around the world. And that comes through the Strait of Hormuz as well, right? So I think the conversation, everyone's focused on the oil. I think you have to start looking at all the other factors that are going to be affected, all the other parts of the economy are going to be affected as a result of this, if this continues much longer. And quite honestly, you know, I think a lot of us thought maybe this is going to be over by now. And clearly it's not. And they're digging their heels in. And they don't seem to be bowing to the pressure. So I'm not really sure where that leaves Trump.
Well, you know, I don't, some people make snippet responses, but there was a guy the other day, they said, whatever, who knows what they're actually saying, but the news was that the Iranians had offered, they'll open up the strait if we open up their ports, and we'll talk about the other stuff later.
Right.
And so they asked some guy, I forget what I was watching, and he goes, well, let's put it this way. If it had been Trump's idea, he'd have said yes, but since it wasn't, he's got to say no. I'm going, and I go, yeah, you know, well, boy, I sure hope that's not the case. Okay. But there was one of the listeners, and they sent me a lot of stuff, Kenny, it was a half hour. I listened to it. The guy went through the entire list of like all the products that essentially come through there, and how some of them are backing up at the Panama Canal. And I didn't realize that if your cargo is more valuable, you can pay more and get ahead of the other guy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Something. I mean, I don't know if it's that, but basically, he said the fertilizer ships are at the end of the line, because you know, you can't pay that much to put a fertilizer ship through there. You know, if it's got urea or whatever the hell they use for you know,
fertilizer,
potash, and those kinds of things. And I didn't realize a lot of that came from those countries.
I did not realize that either. I mean, it was interesting to realize that, understand that as this conversation is going on, because everyone just talks about it's the oil. In fact, there's a lot more that comes from there, which I'm learning as kind of this conflict unfolds across the global stage.
Well, a lot of it is products you get from oil, you know,
right.
There's also sulfuric acid and those other kinds of things you can get. I mean, a lot of your fertilizer comes from oil, or at least the what's the product?
Right.
I mean, so a lot, there's a lot of the byproducts. I mean, that's why if you look at, it's weird. I tried to dig into this, Kenny. I finally found, I think, the answer. But if you look at the field production of oil here, it's 13 point something million barrels a day. It got up near there in Trump's first term. Then with the COVID, it went way down. Then during Biden's term, it pretty much went up the whole way since as soon as the COVID was over. And now we're kind of back up to sort of where we were before. So the idea that, you know, when Biden was in there, he hated oil and everything is total BS because it went up like almost every day the guy was in there once the... And Trump was positive on oil, and it was until the COVID. So if you read this stuff, you get the... If you go back like 40 years... You get the feeling that the oil industry is bigger than who's ever in the Oval Office. I mean, that's a conclusion you come to because, I mean,
but I think that's true.
Yeah,
right.
It's, well, I mean, the only president, and you probably could guess this. Name me one president where the oil was less than when he entered office. Our production.
When our production was less.
Yeah. Bush the lesser.
First Bush or second Bush?
Second Bush, the lesser.
Really?
Yeah. And now, that was before fracking was invented.
Right.
So a lot of the big production now is not because of Trump, because of Obama. It's because all of a sudden we could do it. But, I mean, I don't know what the Bush's deal was with the oil and the Venezuelans, and they were so big with the Saudis. I wonder if someday somebody's going to read a book while you and I are still alive. Or we could read, because something was weird between the Bushes and the oil industry, and you would think they were gung ho on it, but the figures don't show that, and I don't know why that is, but anyway, but now if you look at our total consumption, it's like 20 million barrels a day, and yet the field production is 13.7, so you might say and then Trump will say we're even, or you look other places and we're even. Well, the reason why, and Trump's right, is the other 7 million barrels are like propane and all the other stuff that comes out of oil that we get in different ways, which is like natural gas production. So even the numbers don't match, but yet they do match, which is kind of weird. But anyway, the field production, we're actually, you know, it's weird. We're backing off a little there. And it has nothing to do with Trump, because I think that some of these fracking fields are starting to, they're not growing like they were. I don't think it has anything to do with the price. I think it has to do with their, they might be running out of gas a little bit.
I don't know. All I know is that, you know, we are now producing at, you know, historic levels, and we're a net producer, a net exporter on balance. And so that's all positive for the U.S. economy.
Well, we're very, very small on the exporter. We use 20.5 and we do 21 or something. It's not like we're... You know, it's not like we're Saudi Arabia in terms of an exporter.
No. Yeah, right. Correct. But we're still a net exporter of oil, right?
Yeah.
Which is good for our industry.
Well, a little bit. Very little bit. Well, but now we're exporting diesel, and that's why the price of diesel is racketing up. So it's not necessarily good for us that we're exporting the diesel part.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I buy gas. I don't buy diesel, so I'm not paying attention to where diesel is at the moment. But
well, you see
I
where
will
it
tell
says,
you
so where it says unleaded gas, and the figure next to it says diesel.
I know that. I just never look at it because it's not something I buy, right? But I will tell you is that, you know, it suddenly because I wasn't really paying attention, and then last week my car was nearly empty. I tried to drive it all the way down because I wanted to see what it was going to cost me to fill it completely, right? It's 18 gallons. It cost me like $83, and I went, wow. I go, suddenly, like, you know, because 6 months ago, it would have cost me $50, right, or $55. Yep. And so suddenly I thought to myself, wow, I go, and I don't fill my car that often because I don't drive a lot, right? I drive six miles back and forth to the office and during the week, so it's not like I'm driving all over the place. But I thought to myself, you know, that's very impactful for someone that's going to fill up their tank once a week, right?
Yeah.
That's an extra $30. It's an extra, you know, $120 a month. That's an extra $1,200 or $1,400 a year. It starts to add up for a lot of people.
Well, my Suburban had a 42-gallon tank. That would have been a drink.
Yeah, and it's going to be, if this doesn't get resolved soon, and it suddenly looks like it's not going to get resolved very soon, unless, of course... You know, Trump says he's had it, and he starts blowing up the bridges and the tunnels and the roads and all that shit. Then maybe they'll come to the table and say, "Okay, stop." But if he doesn't start doing that, it appears that Iran's just going to stick their heels in and say, thumb their nose at everybody and say, no, we're not doing
it. Well, there are people in the world, Kenny, maybe we don't have them in Washington, that when you blow up the leadership of a place and then 2 weeks later say there's nobody to talk to.
Right.
Duh.
Right. And we've blown up three layers of leadership.
Yeah, duh.
Right.
what are we talking about here? So,
right. And that's his point. He doesn't even know who he's talking to,
yeah.
Right? And he said it. He goes, I don't know who's in charge. I don't know who's really writing the letters, who's sending them. Is it the guy who's running the IRGC, or is it that the other president whose name just came up? I've never heard it before. Not the Ayatollah, but I guess the president of Iran. But it's very interesting because I don't know, and no one really knows because I haven't said it. Who's actually doing the negotiating?
Well, the president, I don't think, has been bumped off. But he questions how much power does he have. Plus,
right.
On this end, you know, and I kind of don't want to go down this road, but to me, in listening to different people, you know, on TV, you got to listen to all kinds of them because maybe you'll get a fact out of one of them if you listen close enough. The difference in motivation in having this over versus not over, the spread between Trump and Netanyahu is light years. Netanyahu does not want this over.
No, he does not want it. Right. And he said it on 60 Minutes, yeah. Basically, the other night. You know, he goes, this is far from over.
We I'm looking at this field production just to, you probably know this, but we busted into the 13 numbers. We almost got there in 2019. We were 12.998, 12.993. And then with the COVID, we dropped all the way down to 10.9. So it dropped pretty low, and that was by 2022, which is started dropping when Trump was in office, then went down the first year or two under Biden. And once the COVID was over, we're right back 11.6, 11.8, 11.7, to where we topped out last July, like that last July, August, September, 13.864 was our biggest month, which was last October.
Yeah.
And now we're down to, well, we were 13.2 last month in January. Maybe that's a winter thing. Now we're back up to 13.6. So we've been in the 13s now for really the last little bit of Biden's and the first a year and a half or so of Trump. So it's, I mean, we were 13.4 December of 24 when Biden was still in there. We went 13. Seems like we drop every January. But now we're right about the top, but it's not, I think the Bakken is not growing anymore. It's the big place that's been really growing has been the Permian.
Yeah.
Now I think that's kind of flattened out, but yeah, we're producing a boatload of oil here. There's no question about that. And we're getting some from Venezuela now, which fills up those refineries in the Gulf that were pretty much shut down because that oil is very unique to those refineries.
Right. They were also talking about trying to expand the production of Venezuela. It won't be that easy. You know, the infrastructure is all very old and all that stuff, and they've got to create new infrastructure, so it's not going to happen overnight. But you know, you do have to look at that as a potential new source of quote unquote new source of oil for the globe, right?
But it's crap oil, and you have to have a refinery set up for that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's that you couldn't
it's
bring
heavy,
that
right? Isn't it heavy?
Oh,
oil?
It's heavy, sandy. It's horrible. I mean, you could if you brought that to Whiting, you'd clog the place up.
That's why
everybody was so anxious to have this this pipeline. From Canada,
yeah, the Keystone Pipeline,
yeah, because
the one that Biden canceled.
Well, it's the same, and you know, people on the right, you know, can be just as dumb about this as people on the left. Oh man, that was going to be for us. No, it wasn't. That pipeline was to get Canadian tar sands oil, which
right.
is about as crappy as the Venezuelan oil, from Canada to our refineries on the
right.
Gulf.
Down on the coast.
It was not about the shoot off into Whiting for Chicago or any place like that because they couldn't handle any of that stuff. So it was a way to keep those. Those are the same refineries that Trump buddy just bought out of bankruptcy like 2 weeks before they pilfered the president. Go figure. You think he didn't know that was coming? how come we're not involved in any of this stuff?
I have no idea. I don't get the phone call.
Why not? You're on TV all the time.
Call me.
Well, you know what? Now what I'm going to ask you, why aren't you on Air Force One going to China with Musk and all the rest of those guys?
I know. I was listening to all the names that are going to China this weekend with him. Or tomorrow, when is it? Friday they're going, right? Or Thursday or Friday, something like that. Yeah, I didn't get that call either. I'm not sure. I'm gonna have to call him up and find out why I was not included.
Are you all in favor of this plutocracy we're moving toward?
I am not in favor of it.
It sure looks like it's on its way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
What the?
All right, listen, I gotta jump.
All right, buddy. You take
all right,
care.
I'll talk to you.
SP futures down 33, NASDAQ futures down 291, kind of where we were. If there's any kind of a move, we'll intercept. Professor Hal, you with us?
Yeah, what's up?
All kinds of stuff. It was started the day
a little. X has got some crazy things going on. I finished grading last night around 11, and I was grading until I was grading from like 9 o'clock in the morning till 11, and I got it all done about an hour before it was due.
Are you and then you like to smoke a doob?
So I was on X last night, and I was just reading a bunch of different stories.
Were you you like to like smoke a doob during this, so you're in a good mood, give everybody good grades, or what?
No, I don't do any of that. My drug of choice is caffeine delivered via coffee or Coke Zero. That's my drug of choice. Yeah.
Well, good for you. I mean,
I occasionally have a cup of chamomile. It mellows me out, but...
Well, whatever you need, I'm sure the students want you nice and mellow when you're grading those tests.
Well, yeah, my eyes are still sore from being at my computer all day. And my rear end is sore, too, from sitting in my chair.
Oh, God. When I took my final from Milton Friedman, it was one of the big classes I had there, right? Because he didn't teach that
much.
Did you
have to use a slide rule?
No, God, no. It was a blue book. It was a take-home, and it was the same stuff.
Well, he gave you a take-home.
Oh, yeah. And then
Well, those are the worst tests.
Well, then, well, yeah. But it was just...
They take you like 8 hours to finish.
Yeah, well, it was all stuff like... he'd blob something from the Time magazine, some simple thing that the government was doing.
You know why professors love take-home exams?
I don't know.
They don't have to walk around. I hate giving exams in class. I just can't stand there for an hour and a half walking around. Maybe he'd have a TA do it, but
there was a final.
Yeah.
In the University of Chicago, they had all these people that had nothing but time. They would actually audit a class before they
would
take.
That's cool.
Or if you were in the class and you got the midterm and it was too hard, you could withdraw. You get like half your money back and not even have it count against you.
Oh, would you get a pass-fail or something like that?
No, you just withdrew.
Huh.
So the class had like 100 and some people, which most classes there didn't even near there. Like, so you
How many did you end up with at the end of the semester?
When I took the final, it couldn't have been 20 people there.
You start with over 100 and you end up with 20?
They all just weren't there. I don't know if they all withdrew or they were all there. So I take the take-home.
That's crazy,
the take-home was something like, the government has like some simple policy, be it on fertilizer or whatever, and it would be analyze this on stock and flow for the next 15 years, where this all goes. That's the test. So you had to write this huge thing about if this happens, it's going to affect this and this graph and this graph. But oh, by the way, 5 years from now, the price of this could be higher, this could be lower. I mean, you had to keep going. So
like a research paper.
No, yeah, it was like a research paper. Yeah. So of course you hand that in. There's only like 20 of us left. So the knucklehead is up, the Nobel Prize winning knucklehead, is up there grading him while we're taking the test. And I keep looking at him. He's got this big red pen and he keeps slashing it through everybody's. And I'm thinking, that must be mine. I'm trying to concentrate on the other test. And all he is this big red pen, bright big X's, people's take homes. And I'm going, God, does this suck? I wish he would have
done that. The interesting thing about exams, usually the people that take the longest do the best, and the people that turn it in fastest generally don't do well. At least that's my experience.
Well, imagine.
And everybody thinks, oh, that guy turned his in fast. He must have got the best grade. But in my experience, on average, the people that turn it in first, they do poorly and they just give up and turn it in.
Well, imagine if you gave out a test today, but we were just talking about stuff coming out of the straight. If you were to say, because the Straits Hormuz are compromised, potash deliveries are going to be down 30% for the next year and a half. You analyze that in three different countries. One is a Monopoly and Potash, one's a cartel and Potash, and one's Perfect Competition. You analyze how they all how it all works its way through the economy.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
That, but that's, you know, that was the test. That's why you always get, but it trains you to not just look at what happens today. It says, okay, what how's this going to be 6 months? What if people, you know, what if it percolates through with Perfect Competition? Where's the bottleneck? Where if it's not? What if it's a monopoly where they can just raise the price wherever they want? Every one of the answers is different.
Yeah,
that's why I constantly on the show keep saying, wait a minute. You can't say that in the medical profession, which is pretty much a monopoly now in some areas, that the result is going to be the same as if it was competitive, because it won't be. I mean, that's why I don't
you
like
know, the funny world. Thing about the monopoly you mentioned in healthcare. If you watch the Netflix series called Virgin River, boy, I don't know. Maybe the writers, econ majors, maybe they've read my post, but they describe a hospital that is trying to monopolize the Northern California region, and they're moving into the family doctor's community, Virgin River.
Yep.
And they get the medical board to suspend his license, and they want, because they want to take over his practice. And I'm like, you know, that is what's going on in North Carolina. You see all these like health clinics pop up, and they're not like independently owned health clinics. They're like the Moses Cone health
clinics. Without a doubt, without a doubt.
And they're just I think they're putting out all these medical doctor private practices out of business, and doctors are going to end up being employees. I think that's the general trend.
If you were to listen to yesterday to Katie and Audrey, you know, through her real estate stuff, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people, but they're all in the financial community, right? Well, I know a bunch of lawyers in the neighborhood and stuff, but she, somehow or another, because one of her best friends is a doctor, she knows an awful lot of doctors. And a lot of these guys that are 60 years old and have been a really good doctor and independent their whole life, they're all, because of insurance, they've all had to join these firms. And all of a sudden, you know, they're working Saturdays, they're working this, and they can only have this much time with a patient. It's insane what's happening. And I think that the acts they use on people, I think they get a better rate from the insurance companies than somebody else, which is collusion, totally. It's almost like if you were a...
The whole thing's
car lines. Well, Milton Friedman's always biggest example is cab drivers. What if State Farm were to charge a cab driver $5,000 for insurance, but the minute you joined another firm, they only charged the firm $2,000? How could you be an independent? I think, you know, if we had a government that did anything except applaud this, if you gave them money.
Well, the government, it doesn't just applaud it. It creates the rules and regulations and restrictions, the con laws and the licensing, the patents and the permissions that cartelize these industries.
I think one of the reasons why that group is encroaching on these people is I'll bet their cost to insure the guy is going to be less with them than it is on his own.
Yeah.
Which is not right by any law. Yet who's going to stop it? Biden, Trump, Obama, Bush?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, these politicians who rail against corporations in general, man, they're in the pockets of Big Pharma. I mean, Big Pharma just dumps all kinds of money in their campaign re-election campaigns. And then Big Pharma, anytime you turn on the cable news networks, every freaking ad is a pharmaceutical product with 15,000 side effects.
So you're not going to get CNBC to one of the
they're not going to be critical of pharma. They're not going to be critical of China.
I'm sure
Bloomberg's not going to be critical of China.
The greatest,
because they want that 1 billion person market. They want to be in there. And if they're too critical of China, they're not going to get in there. That's why the NBA got so much pushback from not commenting on what was going on in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
because they didn't want to lose that market.
In Casablanca, I'm shocked there's gambling in here. You're winning, sir. Oh, yes, thank you. I can't believe how much these hospitals are charging. Your campaign contribution, sir. Oh, yes, thank you. Same thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how do you... I don't think...
Oh, by the way, I was going to tell you that when I taught intermediate micro as a graduate student at Washington State University, I was famous for my final exam, which was in class. I only had two questions. And the first question was parts A through M. And the second question was parts A through
God.
And one was Marsha Brady. It was a Marsha Brady question where I was Monkees albums and some other product, and they had a derived demand from utility. And the second question was keg taps were capital and wait staff or bartenders were labor, and they had to do a profit maximization in the short run, and then they had to go to the long run and do the cost minimization optimization problem. It was pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, I don't get how the stuff we talk about is complicated enough to where,
yeah,
you if you're a politician, you can act like you don't understand it.
Well, I think a lot of them probably got C's and D's in economics.
Well, one of our, he never came on the show, but one of my buddies, I'll just say Robert, used to work for the Federal Reserve. He retired, but he wasn't a policy guy. He was a money flow guy, and he's an attorney. Interesting life. He was an attorney, represented people in arbitrations and in criminal court, and then decided to become an economist. Sort of like you. He became an economist was like his third career, and but he became an expert on money flows back and forth, and was one of the major drivers. As you know, you mentioned the banking laws and how they manage to screw up individual people, probably on purpose. You know, it's been what you've been talking about between the banking laws and the money supply. It's only benefited certain people, which has kind of been your theme. Well, he talked about some of the banking laws got to the point where you couldn't put money in a bank. So I'm talking about you and I could, but say Board of Trade Clearing might have $400 million in excess one night, and the next night not have it. So it has to go in and go out. And you couldn't, because of the banking laws that you're talking about, that's considered fast money. So for them to drop $200 or $300 million in a bank, they actually had to have, like, Jamie Dimon's personal signature to let it in, because the bank had to have more capital if you deposited money, which is kind of weird, right? And because of the Dodd-Frank ratios. So let me get this straight. We have banks that won't lend anybody money like you're talking about, and by the way, you can't give them cash. What exactly does a bank do other than those two things, right? So Robert and a few of these guys got together and said, we need the direct input from, like, Board of Trade Clearing and OCC into the Fed. So if we have $400 million extra dollars, we can actually deposit the money at the Fed. So he goes in front of Congress. Of course, he goes out. I was giving him no end of crap. I said, Robert, that looks like an undertaker suit. Where the hell did you buy it? He's got the black suit on, the white shirt, the black tie, you know. And he's sitting in front. He's got the beard. He looks like Ernest Hemingway. Real distinguished looking guy. So he's sitting in the chair in front of the Congress, you know, when they interview somebody. And he's sitting there all by himself, like in a Captain Kirk scene. All these guys are drilling him with questions. I said, Robert, did anybody know what the hell you were talking about when you're talking about reserves and money going in and the banks not letting him in? He goes, the chairman of the committee knew something only because he had this clerk that knew what he was talking about. He must have been like a finance, you know, PhD someplace. He's whispering in his ear. He goes, the other guys asking these questions, they had no idea why I was there. They had absolutely no clue, but they just wanted their 2 minutes on TV, were asking me some of the dumbest questions I've ever heard. But the chairman knew something, because this one guy was prodding them. They had no idea about excess money flows and how the banks wouldn't take it and what it did to their ratios, nor did they want to learn.
If you watch those hearings, those guys are just reading a script, and they're not interested in the answers of the people giving testimony. And the guys giving the testimony are mostly reading, you know, a scrubbed and polished up, don't get me in trouble, transcript as well. And they're just reading stuff to each other.
Well, right?
They'll post, a guy that goes in front of Congress will post testimony that person is going to give that day. And then they just read it for the most part.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's just a waste of time.
When Manny Weber was still producing before he had the two little girls and became full-time job. One day I was talking about, geez, man, I was listening to this interview, and all the guy had these five questions, and he goes, Chief, you got to understand one thing. He goes, you're one of the few guys that actually listens to the answer and formulates your next question based on the answer. because nobody yeah. else does that. They come there with five questions, and no matter what you say, no matter what the answer is, no matter how far it takes you afield, you come up with the next question. It doesn't even match at all what the guy just said. That's why you hear that all day long, because they have to have all their questions formulated before they go on there, because they don't get the chance to ad lib like you can. Like if you start talking about your football team winning last night, my next question could be about the football team. Theirs can't be. It's got to be the questions that they told their boss they were going to ask. So it's a lot different.
You know, some of those lawyers are some of the best economists. I had a friend that I went to church with. He's now the Solicitor General of Idaho.
Really? What does the Solicitor General of Idaho do?
Well, he was the one that was arguing a case in front of the Supreme Court this spring, I think it was. And I haven't talked to him probably since we moved, before we moved. Probably the last time we spoke was probably 2019. And I'm watching the news one night, and all of a sudden I see his picture. His name was Alan Hurst. And I see his picture, like, on the cable news. And they're talking about how he's making an argument in front of the Supreme Court. And he was just a lawyer that graduated from Yale that went to church with me in Utah. Now he's like the Solicitor General or something like that, or Assistant Attorney General of Idaho, making an argument in front of the Supreme Court about bathroom issues in high schools, I think it was. And him and I used to have these conversations after church that would last an hour. And he had read Mises and Hayek, and it was probably one of the best conversations I ever had. And
really?
He had very little economics training.
Well, is that one thing I recall from grad school when I finally got near the end? You find it advanced marketing, advanced finance, advanced accounting. It's all the same subject, right?
Yeah. Well, he's also a member of the Federalist Society, so he's a Solicitor General of Idaho.
Good for him.
He was just a lawyer working a law firm.
There's something, and isn't there something you
I
have to
talked
do?
I haven't talked to him in like 8 years. It's crazy.
Isn't there something you have to do? You have to go to Washington and tour the Supreme. There has to be there's something, a certificate you get to be able to argue in front of the Supreme Court. I wonder what that is.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was shocking to see him on the TV.
Hey, do you mind if we go to break a little early? We come back, we got the CPI. You ready to go through the CPI and find out where the lies are? SP Futures down 32, NASDAQ Futures down 288. We've come back a little bit, but we're still kind of where we're going to go on break. We come back, we'll have the CPI numbers. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up big Stocks and Jocks. I'm somehow, Ricky on the board. I got so much stuff up here. I got to find the right page. There we go. I got the CPI up here and everything else. Ricky, my computer is overloaded. What can I tell you? SP Futures down 33. NASDAQ Futures down 295. Individual stocks. Micron, which has gone up every day like 50, 60 bucks, finally is down a little bit today, 28, but nowhere near as much as it was up. We've got, NVIDIA is down $2. It was up 5 yesterday. Google's down 4. Microsoft down 2. Nothing kind of crazy anyway. We had AMD, which has been going parabolic. It's down 14, 3%, but nowhere near what they've been up. Over in Europe, we'll do this quick because this number's coming out. Europe, we've got they're down as well. As soon as this thing comes up here, the DAX down 288, 1.2%, FTSE down 51.5%, CAC round down 52.6, so not horrible, but they are down. The Nikkei is, I'm gagging this. Nikkei is actually up 324, 0.5%. Hang Seng down 58, not that much, 0.2. Shanghai down 10.2, so not much going on there. With Trump going over there this week, we'll see where that all lands. We've got bonds. Now, this is up 2 basis points, 4.44. Now, here's the yesterday. You can't, we've been up how many days in a row. One of the little things you look for, now we have the CPI number today, so the reason for this. is the interest rates crept up, and it looked like the 30-year was going through 5 today, and it's now 5.002. And yesterday, whenever you have an up day and you see the VIX up, you got to smell a rat the next day. It doesn't mean, you know, you just short the market or anything, but that usually doesn't happen, and when it does, it's something you might want to take a look at. Again, it's not usually when the market's up, the VIX wants to go down. Oil up 352, 101.59, so well through 100 here. Brent up 363, 107.84. Arbob back up to almost 370, so that's not good. Gold was up yesterday, down 15 bucks today, 47.13. Silver down $1.20. We had a huge rally yesterday. It's 84.67. Foreign exchange, dollars up a little bit, but the euro is still over 117. The British pound up 135. Crypto is down 1,100 bucks, but still 80,792. A lot of stuff there. Real quick on this other stuff, and then we'll get back to the Ricky, and then we'll get back to these CPI numbers.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:30 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 46 degrees right now with a high of 72. Mostly cloudy, becoming windier and warmer with a couple of showers this afternoon. Possibility of gust winds and small hail today as well. There's a thunderstorm tonight, otherwise partly cloudy and windy with a low of 50 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 77 degrees right now with a high of 108. Turning out cloudy and very hot with the temperature approaching dangerous heat. Tonight, partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 78 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe's, 19 minutes. We're looking at 35 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 32 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 35 minutes. Let's talk sports super quick. For the MLB, Diamondbacks beat Rangers 1-0 yesterday. And today we got Cubs at Braves at 6:15 p.m. and Royals at White Sox at 6:40 p.m. For the NHL, Avalanche beat Wild yesterday 5-2 and now leads the series 3-1. Today we got Sabres at Canadiens 6 p.m. for Game 4 and Ducks at Golden Knights for Game 5, and that's going to be at 7 p.m. For the NBA semifinals, Game 4, we got yesterday Cavaliers beating Pistons 112-103 and tying the series 2-2. Thunder beat Lakers yesterday as well and move on to the conference finals. Today we got Timberwolves at Spurs at 7 p.m. for Game 5. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
We have CPI came out, and it's less than expected. The monthly is, well, here again, we've got the unadjusted 0.9, which would mean three really hot months in a row, but they adjusted it down to 0.6, which is less than last month. The unadjusted year-over-year is 3.8. How? And what does it do to the expected stuff? The S&Ps are down 35. NASDAQ's down 300, so it's not really pushing the S&P much. I'm unfamiliar with where they get this adjusted and unadjusted per month here. It should just be what it is, but it's not what they're doing. So what do you make of this? I think the numbers.
Well, you can go to the PDF report and they give you unadjusted 12 months. So
well, that's what I'm looking at.
Oh, okay. You're
saying,
looking at the unadjusted. I thought
but there's an unadjusted and a seasonally adjusted per month.
Yeah.
And now this.
Well, they just want to subtract out the normal fluctuations that occur for various goods at different points in the year. Take out the seasonality.
That's what they say
they do. If you look at annual changes, you don't have to worry about the seasonal adjustment. So I always look at the annual changes.
Well, energy commodities is up. Energy is up 6.3 unadjusted. Yeah. They adjust it down to 3.8. What's the adjustment for? It's up 6.3. What are they talking about?
Well, again, we're talking about March, right? March, we hadn't had that effect yet. People aren't really driving in March. People start driving.
Oh, these are April numbers. March to April.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong one.
Yeah, you got to refresh, bud. You're looking at February to March. No,
the report says March. Dang it, I'm looking at the wrong.
Duh.
One.
What? He's economist, guys. You can't trust him.
Yeah. Okay. It was released Friday.
Oh, released 2 minutes ago.
Okay. Yeah, I just clicked the link.
Look at table one.
My link must be old.
No, consumer price index for all urban consumers, table one in the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay, is this oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah. I clicked the PDF. The PDF is a month old. Okay, sorry. Let's see here. Yeah, look at the unadjusted 12 months, April 2026.
But 3.8.
Those are massive.
Well, 3.8 is, you know. But I mean, but you go down the group here and Wait, who? I'm kind of a simple dude beneath it all. if one of the guys who does a show once in a while with me is Mike Murphy. His mother actually used to do CPI work in Cleveland. She'd go out and, you know, she probably had 10 commodities or 20, I have no idea. And she would turn in her numbers, what they were. I mean, every month she, was it rice, noodles, God knows what. I've always been curious that if Mike Murphy's mom says the price of rice is $1 a pound and last month it was 98, it's up 2%, or actually 2.something%, at what desk does somebody say, that's not right, let's make it 1%? Who the hell is he or she? They didn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, what is, I've got energy here for the month.
Well, all they're doing is, like, for example, the way the seasonal adjustment works is if demand is generally high during a specific quarter versus low during another quarter, they want to just subtract out. And that usually is pretty fixed through time. So just kind of smoothing that out. So they're just smoothing out they're kind of like smoothing the average out.
Why?
But you don't need to worry about seasonal adjustment if you're looking at 12-month percent changes.
Well, okay, but I've been doing this so long.
So essentially, if you take the 12-month unadjusted percent change and you divide it by 12, you get kind of a smooth.
Okay, but you're average. You've been how can I say this very nicely? You've been coached. I won't say brainwashed. You've been coached into this new way of doing things.
Well, it's pretty. It's been around for a while.
Okay, I don't understand that, but it has been around as long as I've been around. when I was doing this, and if the CPI last month went up a percent, you said okay, what's 1 times 12? That was your annual. You didn't go back and say it was okay. A year ago wasn't anything. Who cares what happened a year ago?
Yeah, but when you do a month to month, it could be the case where last month was way down, and this month is, you know, where it should be, and that could cause a large month to month.
So I prefer that's
annual.
That's not why they're doing it. I know, but I'm
just saying if you have a huge month to month. There could be many reasons. Maybe this month is much higher than it normally is, or maybe last month was a lot lower than it normally is, and this month is just fine.
Okay, we're in.
Could have an artificially low, relatively low previous month, and an artificially high current month. But there's a lot of reasons for it.
Yeah, and most of them are crap. I think. Yeah. I mean, if my gas is up, I'll use gas, even though I don't like using that. If my gas is up 2% this month, 2% last month, why do I care that last March it was even? Yeah. Who cares about last March? I mean, my inflation is happening right now.
An annual change and a monthly change is important because it shows you. It depends on the divisor.
I'm trying to communicate
base,
here.
From which you calculate a percent change is really important.
To my debating friend, all I'm trying to say here is it has changed. It used to be people looked at, you're right, sometimes you take, if you were anybody who had maybe a little bit of common sense, you took the last 2 months and multiplied it by 6, or the last 3 months and multiplied it by 4. You just didn't take the 1 month. But the idea that somehow...
You need to smooth it out a little bit.
Okay, but my point is, what do I care what gas was, what the percentage increase was last March to last April? Who cares? It was a year ago.
Yeah.
I can't buy it for that. What, you're trying to tell me that I'm okay because a year ago it was zero?
I'm not saying you're okay.
Well, that's I'm saying that's their message, which is bad. All I care about is it's up. I mean, they've got...
So here's a scenario, Tom, in terms of gasoline. Suppose last month, for some reason... Everybody stayed home and demand was really weak for gasoline. Well, the gasoline price last month would have been really, really low. And then maybe this month, all that's gone because the weather's fine. And the gas price is where it was 2 months ago. Now you're going to get a huge percent change from the previous month to the current month. So you have to have a little caution when you're going month to month. That's all I'm saying.
I understand that. Yeah. But I'm not as good at math as you are, but... They've got motor fuel here this month.
Oh, it's horrible.
It's up 11.3%.
Yeah.
Now, the adjusted is up 5.7. What does that do for me? It's up 11.3. I mean, what are you doing? You just stabbed me. Don't tell me you were aiming for another spot. You stabbed me.
It looks like there's substitution going on. You got these high energy prices.
Don't read anything into these idiots that are doing this other than they're lying.
Well, but if you look at used cars and new cars, those are, if inflation is generally 4 or 5%, new car sales and used car sales are down substantially, which probably is weak demand. So as gas prices go up, maybe people put off buying the new car, and they're going to wait until gas prices come down.
I'll say this to you.
So people are making substitutions.
They've got used cars and trucks from last year down 2.7%. And I think most of the listeners know one of my stupid hobbies is when I have a half hour with nothing else better to do, I dig through the price of old trucks.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they are not down 2.7% year over year. I absolutely guarantee you.
Yeah.
I mean, you try and buy like a 2007 pickup and tell me it's not appreciably higher than it was 2 years ago. Appreciably. Like, it used to be 10 and now it's like 14. The price of these new cars have driven used car prices to the moon. Absolutely the moon. There's no way that they're down.
Well, there are substitutions happening, though. You see, with gas prices really high like they are, people are, you look at EV sales. EV sales are up 20-30%. And in Europe, they're up even higher. So people are making substitutions.
Okay.
Right? If gas prices go up, I don't drive as much as I used to. I tend to conserve more. And in North Carolina, I can buy E15 gas. 15% ethanol gas, which is about 50 cents cheaper, and it burns cleaner. So people make substitutions. You know, the most outrageous, that most anger I felt in an economics conversation, when I was taking math econ from an economist, I was a math major at Idaho State University back in the late 90s, and I was making the argument that when gas prices go up, we tend to go into recession. I had maybe one or two semesters of econ at that point. I was mainly a math major. And my professor goes, well, if gas prices go up, then people will generally buy an economy car. And he kind of enraged me because I want him to agree with me that higher gas prices, because I felt it, and I didn't have the luxury of buying a new car that got better gas mileage. And the way he just said, well, people will switch.
You know what? I think he's, in a lot of ways, he's full of crap.
He's full of crap.
I actually
agree with him now because people.
You know, on a totally theoretical level,
our budgets aren't the things we put in our budget aren't fixed from month to month like the CPI.
I understand that.
When things go up, we buy other things.
Okay, but if you do that, all right,
we shouldn't even be looking at the CPI. We should be looking at the money growth rate, smooth over.
Well, did you hear what I said about India? India's claiming they got a 3.8% inflation rate and they're growing the money supply by 17.
Yeah, see, I mean, we should be looking at the money supply growth. What we should be looking at.
Okay, but I'm going to say, and I went through this, God, it was a show a couple years ago, you know, I don't think you were on, but I went through the idea, just what you're talking about, somebody going and buying a car that gets better gas mileage. And at the time, I was driving the three-quarter ton Suburban with the 410 rear end, and I'm getting 12 miles at a gallon. Right. The good news, I had a 42-gallon tank, so I could carry it around.
But it was paid off, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You didn't have a car payment. You didn't have full coverage
insurance. That was where I was going with this.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, if I go out and buy a new truck, say I just want to stick with the trucks, I could find one if I got a 5.3-liter and, you know, different rear end and the thing and so forth. I probably could get that up to 16 miles per gallon, 15, 16. So I could keep it simple. I go up 50%. Right, so I used, what the hell number did I use? I said I use 100 gallons a month, which I didn't, but I did. So now I'm going to be down to, say, 50 to keep it simple. And gas at the time was like $3 a gallon. So okay, that's $150 a month. That's kind of a lot, you know. So multiply that out per year. I said if I buy a new Suburban, they're $75,000, which the tax on it is 10%. So I'm paying $7,500 just for the tax, not to mention title changes and all the other BS that comes with it. What is another $50 a month in gas. What did I say? $100 a month in gas. See, I'm at my break even on just the tax is 75 months. It's unbelievable. I mean, there's no way.
I think you and I make those calculations, but I think a lot of Americans don't, and they won't buy. They won't replace a Suburban with a Suburban. They'll replace a Suburban with maybe a compact SUV.
Well, if you have a Suburban, you have it for a reason. You're not going to get a Chevy, a little putt car, and say, okay, what do I do?
Oh, I did. I went from a 4x4 Chevy pickup when under the Bush administration, when I first got my job and gas prices went really high. I went from driving a extended cab 4x4 pickup to a minivan and a Cobalt.
Right, but you replace it with two vehicles.
Yeah, one for my wife and one for me.
Yeah, well.
But this is the funny thing. My students were all outraged that gasoline prices were like $4 a gallon during a part of the Bush administration. And I asked them, are you like the people at McDonald's who are paying $4 a gallon of gas for a brand new car, who are wrapped around the drive-thru lane running their car when gas prices are $4 a gallon? And you're in the drive-thru lane at lunch, and you're not turning your car off. How many people actually turn the car off? Or how many people park and walk into the restaurant so they're not wasting gas in the drive-thru lane?
If you turn your
car... one student said they parked the car and walked inside. I told them I did, and I switched to smaller cars, more fuel-efficient cars, so none of them, and I was laughing, have the right to be upset by the $4 gallon of gas.
Well, you know,
and it probably pissed off some people.
There's a lot of the I'll say in some ways, and this is a little bit trite, the reason why the guy with the small car always saves money is because the guy with the big car always has to drive so people can fit in the damn thing.
Hey, I'm a big guy, and my kids hate when they have to ride in my little car.
I don't blame them.
There is no
I don't blame them.
There's no legroom.
You're not going to get any argument out of me. It says if somebody's Suburban is falling apart like mine was, and you go to get a new car, if gas is $8 a gallon, getting a car that has gets better mileage is clearly one of the things you're thinking about. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the idea you're going to turn one in or buy a new one, the gas is such a minimal price of running your vehicle over 5 years.
Well, no, I agree with that. But I also had a family change. We had a son, and the first day I put our son, our infant son, in the back seat of that extended cab pickup truck, I was like, all right, I'm getting a van.
Well, the vans are, if you had one that had a door that opened.
And I tell you, that Chrysler minivan was the most awesome vehicle ever purchased.
They're unbelievable. You wouldn't want to be, you didn't get a tan one, did you, like the commercial?
No, I got a blue, gray, silverish one that was really sharp looking. It was like a blue gray.
So you weren't the guy in the commercial with the owner of the tan minivan and the weight.
No, I told my wife if we ever bought a minivan, shoot me.
You know what?
But that changed when we got the baby, and I had to put a car seat in the van in the truck, and it changed to Lynn. If we ever buy a tan minivan, shoot me.
We went skiing one year. Long time ago, when they first came out, I'm talking early '80s, and we land in Denver, and we're driving up the steamboat, and we got like four or five people, and I forget what I tried to get, like a Suburban or something. They didn't have one, so they give me this minivan. It was the longer version, and I go, this thing looks like, well, I don't want to be dead in this thing. You know what? We loaded up everybody's skis. Everybody was comfortable. It had front wheel drive, not four wheel drive, but it handled fine in the snow. And I got like 22 miles.
Well, that kind of weight is going to really help.
But I mean,
it
got like 22 miles of the gallon. I go, this thing is genius. It's going to take over society, and it did.
Now fast forward to when we have triplets, and we have a 4-year-old or 5-year-old. Triplets in car seats. There's no way you can't use anything but a minivan with sliding doors. And you also have to pack the triplet stroller and the triplet diaper bags and the triplet,
these kids. It's not just the kids; it's the paraphernalia they come with. All right, so what do you make of this report? We're actually only down 20, down 217. I don't believe a word these people say. So, that, so
well, I don't think we should even be looking at a CPI, honestly.
Yeah, but everybody's looking at it.
Yeah, the CPI is an excuse to blame corporations for high prices.
I understand. I'm saying
instead of the culprit, the Federal Reserve and the Congress.
Well, we shouldn't be looking at gas prices either. Except we got to buy it. I mean, this is what we're left with.
Well, you know, ever since gas prices went up, I drive about a third what I used to. I don't drive very often anymore at all, and we're doing most.
Well, you can't drive halfway.
You
can't drive halfway to work.
Well, I'm in a nice situation where I work from my home office, well, so I don't have to go anywhere.
Oh, duh. I just cut back on my driving. Where's your office? Next door. Oh, okay. Well,
my office is in my in-laws, our in-law room. That's where my office is.
Anyway, we're talking about, if I recall, the unadjusted for the last 3 months was like 0.9. Last month, I think, it was 0.6. And the month before was 1. So yeah, that's 1.9, that's 2.5 divided by 3. We're talking really 0.8 per month. And if you multiply that by 12, you're at what? You're at 10%, right? Or 9.5.
Yeah.
So that's really our number. It's not this 3.8 they're telling us year over year. That's my point with this. We're no longer...
I don't trust government statistics.
Well, I'm saying even if you look at their statistics,
yeah,
I don't really care what it was last April or May, you know.
Well, I think the primary reason why they're underreporting inflation is because if they actually reported the inflation, the VA checks would be a lot higher.
Yeah.
Social Security checks would be a lot higher, and they don't want to do that.
Well, brings me to my next question. If you were an attorney, and there was a couple of people here in Chicago, I just hear bits and pieces on a couple of settlements of labor issues, right? You know, somebody's on strike or whatever. One of them, the group, I don't think has had a raise for a year. And over the next 3 years, they're going to get 14% raise. So that means over 4 years, they're going to get 14% total. I'm going to say that they're not even close to keeping up. The other one...
Oh, they're not, no.
The other one was they were going to get a something percent raise, and then they were going to use the CPI for the next 5 years. You're supposed to use the CPI when the people at Pullman, which I was charged with the, I wasn't in charge of it, but I was charged with it, doing it. People believed the CPI.
Yeah.
That it was up a percent. I didn't call the person who we had the railroad.
Well, the CPI's got a life for the government because we owe $40 trillion in debt.
All right. What I'm saying is it's people use it for other reasons than just looking at it for Social Security.
Yeah.
I mean, my biggest, I mentioned this on Joel's partner one day. I was on his show, and he says, how come you don't believe the CPI? And I go, well, the CPI is supposed to be used for a lot of things, not just Social Security, not just to letting you know what things are happening. It's also supposed to be used for people to price contracts going forward. I said, if you and I 10 years ago were to say, okay, we're gonna build 10 houses a year for Carl. And now the price of the house is, back then it was probably $300. Okay, now it's $406, and we can build the house for $270. All right, so we're going to make 10% on the house. And we go, okay, we'll do that. We'll make you 10 this year. We'll make 10 next year, and we'll raise our price with the CPI. Okay, now our price is probably up to we're getting from Carl. I'm going to say it's probably, I don't even think it's even, it probably hasn't even, what's it up, 20% maybe in 10 years? Well, now we're getting 270, 295 for this house instead of 270. I think we're out of business, you know. I don't think there's any way on earth.
Oh, yeah, the margins would squeeze you to death.
I'm just saying, I think that we're out of business.
If people are in that business, they should be using the M2 growth rate smoothed out over a couple years.
Okay, but I'm saying that's what the CPI is for. I mean, you know, when I talk to slippery dudes like you and my brother, you would say, well, you weren't supposed to use the CPI. My brother will say, oh, no, you're supposed to use the building supply index. The point is, that's what the CPI is for. Yes, if I had to do over again, I would have picked a different index. But my point is, you didn't used to have to.
No, you didn't have to, yeah. Well, back then, we didn't have a debt of $40 trillion in a $30 trillion economy.
There, you know what, with the... I don't know how I can even express this.
I think the interest payments are going to be one of the largest budget items in the next couple of years.
Well, I'm gonna lob
it. I think it's more than the defense.
Budget. Without a doubt. I'm gonna lob this one out at you. I think people have never changed, right? You read Greek tragedy, you're always crooks, right? I think as time has gone by, like, nothing is sacred to the crooks, and I mean the crooks that are in Washington. I mean it. The current group in the White House, I think, is the biggest. I can't even imagine. I mean, I can't even go into how much I think they're stealing. They're the biggest crooks I've ever come across. Now, Hunter Biden was no slouch, but he was not in a plane of these guys. But the point is, 30, 40 years ago, even guys like Dick Nixon and people, there was some respect for, like, the numbers. I mean, if you were at war, you didn't cheat on how many people died. You know, if the prices went up, you at least told people the prices went up. There was some, as big of a crook as you are, there was some things that you didn't mess with.
These numbers aren't a Republican thing. This is government.
What are you talking about?
Republican.
Do you forget the part about how he fired the person who put out the numbers when he first got in office?
But the previous administration was lying with employment numbers.
Okay. Tom,
it's not a Democrat-Republican issue.
What I said was, 40 years ago, there was some respect for the numbers, even with people who are crooks. And now there's no respect for anything, I don't think. They'll cheat on anything. And it's not about Biden versus Trump. Biden was a progression along the path. But this guy's worst.
Oh, yeah, I know.
This guy's the worst.
But the government statistics are problematic, not because it's Republican or Democrat. It's just that's the nature of government statistics.
Okay.
And with regard to the CPI, they need to underreport it.
I'm just,
otherwise the budget issue's even worse than it would be.
Okay, I understand why they would be motivated to do that. They were motivated to do that in 78 too. They just didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because the Bureau of Labor Statistics felt they had a job to do.
Now it's
a political number.
Yeah. I think what's going on now is the debt is more than our GDP.
Not an excuse.
I know, but on top of that, you have people on the right who can't be friends with people on the left, and people on the left can't be friends with people on the right because the social media has made us really it's really pitted us against each other.
There are certain things. Let's put it this way. If you go back to the simple world that we're supposed to be in, when people run for office, okay, in a regular world, if you and I ran for office in Carlsville to be mayor. What's the competition really like? The competition, hopefully it's not on stuff like abortion, other kinds of crap. It should be, I want to run the city this way, and if I do this, I'm going to provide this much police, this much other stuff, this is how much it's going to cost in taxes. There should be a competition in our sort of economic plan for the city. And people should vote on the person who is going to run the city, they think is going to run the city better than the other guy. And hopefully, we're both pretty close, and it's a close election in terms of, you know, you're not going to fire the police department, I'm not going to double the size, but there's some common sense that we're both working towards.
Yeah, but the problem with that is people are moving with their feet because people can move today.
What I'm
really
saying, the competition shouldn't.
And blue areas are getting bluer, and red areas are getting redder. So there's really very little competition in these voting districts.
Can I finish the part about it shouldn't be if I get in or you get in, we're going to change the numbers and look like we're doing good. That shouldn't be part of the political plan. It has become that, and I'm appalled by it, to be honest with you.
Oh, I am too. But the reason why that is going on because the blue areas are getting bluer. The red area is getting redder.
Let's take a big
social media, you're either on the right or on the left.
Okay.
If you try to have conversations with people, you can't get any followers because they're not being obnoxious.
Hell, I don't know what any of that means, to be honest with you. I mean, you're a veteran. What if we get to the point where we go on some war excursion, either this guy or some other guy, and 500 people are killed from our side, and we tell people it's 100? Are we going to go that far? and lie about that too. I mean, once you start lying, where's the end?
Oh, it doesn't end with the state.
Yeah, okay, so now they're telling us how many people have died on our side in this Iraq thing. Do we really think it's 100 times that or 10? I mean, at some point, where do you say, hey, ass, you got to give me the right numbers?
Well, Tom, you're making my argument against the state. Look at Abu Ghraib.
Right, we can't overthrow the state.
Punished for Abu Ghraib. The underlings, the higher-ups knew about it. They didn't get punished.
Okay, so because they're all doing it, we're just going to argue about it
I'm just saying that's the nature of the state. And people put way too much power.
And my question is, if we're going to hire people, these people are our hirees, right?
I don't know if we're really hiring them. I think the machines are hiring them. And we've gotten so siloed that I don't think we have choice when it comes to politicians.
Don't be so far up in the ivory tower. You and I are hiring the people who work at the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
I'm not hiring anybody at the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
I'm talking about the citizens are paying these people's salary. They work for us. They are the hired help.
Yeah, but D.C. doesn't consider tax revenue our money. They consider it their money. So we're not really hiring anybody.
Once you go off onto this other tangent, then everything's okay? I'm not willing to say that.
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just pointing out the fact that it's flawed and
it's always going to be flawed. We're never doing about it. I mean, maybe that's true. You could very well be right.
We need to change it.
Well, okay. How are we going to do
that? I'm not saying I like it. I'm pointing out the fact that that's the problem with the state. The state, the people who get elected.
It's not the problem with the state. It's the people who are running it right now. There have been states where you can believe the numbers here.
Yeah, but the problem with the state is a private owner of a company is held accountable by his or her customers every moment of the day. Where a politician that runs for office every other year
The person who runs a company will
we
not.
We can't fire these people fast enough.
The person who runs a company will not be accountable for a while if he gives you all bullshit numbers.
If a company is lying, it's found out really quickly.
But where? How quickly? Not that month? Not that year?
If it's a monopoly, you have a point. But if there's competition and there's no government guarantee of a
how long did Enron make it before they were caught?
Well,
5-10 years.
But that wasn't a competitive marketplace.
Sure was.
It's highly regulated.
I'm
talking about a company like McDonald's. If McDonald's starts lying to people,
they'll get away with it for a decade probably.
No, they won't. People would stop going. Look at Subway sandwiches. Some guy in Australia posts a video that shows a Subway sandwich that was only 11.5 inches long. Subway lost business because of
that. I'm talking about could McDonald's lie about how much they're making and give themselves bonuses? They get away with it for 5-10 years before anybody caught them.
Well, maybe on that, but if they lied about the quality of their product and
that's different. Anyway, we got a dash, but SP Futures only down 18. NASDAQ Futures only down 198. So the CPI number came in probably about where people thought, if you look at the unadjusted versus the other.
Yeah, let's not look at the CPI.
Oh, okay, but that's...
Let's look at the MTA.
Maybe we shouldn't look at it, but it's going to be 90% of what people talk about for the next week.
I know, but it's a big lie. We know that.
Okay, well, anyway I hope you weren't grading one of my papers last night when you were half asleep. Just saying. Anyway, be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks. Nice job, Ricky.
That's all, folks.